Welcome back. Again from Bangladesh, we have an email from Kamal Hussein. Kamal Hussein from Bangladesh says, "Dear staff at IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. I wish you all a very happy and a blessed month of Ramadan. May Allah accept your good deeds and prayers. I also pray to God in this blessed month to ease the suffering of all people around the globe. Happy Ramadan." Salam and greetings to you, Kamal Hussein from Bangladesh, and happy Ramadan to you and all Muslims in your country and around the world. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. We also wish you a very happy and blessed month of Ramadan. And as you said, may Allah accept our deeds and prayers. And also, we like you pray to God that in this blessed month, God eases the suffering of all people around the globe, especially the Yemeni people, the Yemeni civilians, and especially Yemeni children. Again, many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Kamal Hussein from Bangladesh, write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Wish you all the best, Kamal Hussein. Also, from Sweden, we have an email from Jörg Clemens Hoffman from Sweden. Jörg Clemens has sent us a message, a short message. Jörg Clemens says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, may the spirit of Ramadan stay in your heart and illuminate our soul from within. Happy Ramadan." Salam and greetings to you, your Clemens Hoffman from Sweden, and many thanks for writing this congratulatory message on the holy month of Ramadan. I don't know whether you are a Muslim or not, but thanks a lot for sending us this congratulation on the holy month of Ramadan to us in IRIB English Radio, and of course to our dear listeners, to our Muslim listeners around the world. As you said, may the spirit of Ramadan stay in our heart and illuminate our soul from within. We wish you all the best, and we wish you all the good things in this holy month. Your Clemens Hoffman from Sweden. Your Clemens, write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you in the future. We wish you all the best. Wishing you all the best in the holy month of Ramadan and all the time. We wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com www.rabbi.org/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with Rabbi English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on RIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. As you know, this is the blessed month of Ramadan. We're in the month of Ramadan. The month of Ramadan is a very sacred and holy month in the Islamic calendar. One of the distinctions of the month of Ramadan is that the month of Ramadan is the only month where fasting is obligatory on human beings. And the question that we want to ask today is this. A lot of people ask this question: why should we fast? Or what's the reason why we fast? Why has God made this obligatory upon us in this month? With the reservation that human beings don't really know the real causes and real reasons behind the obligations and prohibitions that God has set out in the Islamic law. But nevertheless, we have been made aware of some of the wisdom and benefits of these acts through the Hadith and the Quran. Today we're going to be looking at some of those and examining them in the light of the traditions of the family of the Prophet alayhi salam. In a blessed tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, the Imam is reported to have said that God made the fast obligatory upon human beings so that in this way the poor and the rich would be made equal. This is one of the benefits of fasting. When we fast and we stay hungry and we refrain from certain acts from the morning till the night, we feel a sense of equality with the poor. Who have been deprived under normal situations from these blessings. Obviously, this is a prelude to the elimination and the eradication of poverty. Once we feel this affinity with the poor, we should take steps to rectify their poverty and eliminate it from society. This is one of the reasons why we fast. Another reason which has been mentioned in the traditions is that fasting is a test to see the sincerity and weigh the sincerity of the believers and the Muslims. فَرَزَ اللَّهُ أَسْيَامَ إِبْتِلَاءً لِإِخْلَاصِ الْخَلْقِ Imam Ali alayhi salam has been reported to have said that God Almighty made the fast obligatory upon human beings so that he could test their sincerity. So you could test the sincerity of creatures. Everybody says, we believe in God, we have faith in Him. Right? But how do we know that we really have faith in Him, or we're just saying it with our tongues, verbally? And in order to test this, our faith, God Almighty has made the fast obligatory upon us. This is one of the tests. Obviously, there's other tests as well. Another wisdom or reason why the fast has been made obligatory upon us is so that human beings remember the hunger and thirst that they will experience on the day of resurrection. In a blessed tradition from Imam Reza alayhi salam, the Imam is reported to have said that God commanded people, or the people have been commanded to fast, so that they would know the pain of hunger and thirst, so that that they could remind themselves in this way of their impoverishment on the day of resurrection and the hereafter. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were examining some of the reasons for fasting. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. In this segment of the show, The Months of Allah, we'll be talking about one of the famous reciters of the Muslim world, Egyptian and Iranian. For today's program, we're going to talk about one of the greatest Iranian reciters right now, Brother Hamed Shakirnejad. He's a very young reciter. He was born in 1983 in the city of Mashhad. Mashhad is a very interesting city when it comes to recitation of the Quran, because most of the greatest reciters of Iran are from Mashhad. Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar, he's a very famous reciter who has visited Iran several times, and he was even hospitalized in Iran because he had cancer and he was being treated in Iran. He had said, Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar had said, the center of Quran in the world after Egypt is Mashhad. He didn't say Iran, he said Mashhad. And that's true, that's very true, because we see so many great reciters from Mashhad. Hamed Shakirnejad, his brother Hamid Shakirnejad, Sayyid Muhammad Jawad Husseini, brother Muhammad Jawad Panahi, Mr. Murtaza Sadat Fatemi, and many other reciters from Mashhad. This great reciter, Hamed Shakirnejad, has recited before the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, several times since he was only 8 years old. He is the follower of the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. When he was a child, he imitated the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail. And as he grew older, right now he has his own style of recitation. When a person listens to his recitation, they probably wouldn't know that he is an Iranian reciter. They say that he might be an Egyptian reciter. When he was a teenager, he was able to rank first in the international Quran competition in Saudi Arabia. And he had the privilege to go inside the Kaaba. The officials of that competition said that the person who, you know, ranks first and wins the competition, they're allowed to go inside the house of God, Kaaba, and pray inside the Kaaba. And Hamid Shakir Nejat had the privilege to go inside the house of Kaaba. Now let's listen to a recitation by Brother Hamid Shakir Nejat, Surah Haqqa, verses 1-7.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحق ما
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful, the inevitable reality. What is the inevitable reality? And what can make you know what is the inevitable reality? Thamud and Ad denied the striking calamity. So as for Thamud, they were destroyed by the overpowering blast. And as for Ad, they were destroyed by a screaming, violent wind, which Allah imposed upon them for 7 nights and 8 days in succession. So you would see the people therein fallen, as if they were hollow trunks of palm trees.
وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى
تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان، إليه تنصت الأكوان، وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Communicate.
There's been a lot of controversy in the last year regarding the so-called left in the United States. Ever since Bernie Sanders dropped out of the presidential race in 2020, throwing his support behind Joe Biden, and the more recent force the vote controversy among progressives in the Democratic Party. So let's take a closer look at this progressive label and the people supposedly spearheading its movement. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Heralded as a firebrand progressive, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected to represent New York's 14th congressional district in 2018. As the youngest congresswoman in U.S. history, she unseated one of the most important figures in the Democratic Party, Joe Crowley, in an upset victory that caught people way off guard and was even featured in a Netflix documentary, Knock Down the House. Along with other progressive newcomers elected to the House in historic races, AOC and her colleagues came to be known collectively as the Squad. This included Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, a Muslim of Somali origin who first came to the United States as a refugee, as well as Michigan's Rashida Tlaib of Palestinian origin, and Ayanna Pressley, becoming the first black woman from Massachusetts to be elected to Congress. Together, they threatened to take on the D.C. political establishment, engaging in bold direct action, holding sit-ins and protesting outside Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office. Indeed, at the time, these self-styled socialists or social democrats seemed to represent a new generation that wasn't afraid to break from traditional liberal orthodoxy.
If you're a one-term Congress member, so what? You can make 10 years worth of change in one term if you're not afraid.
AOC would decry Israel's massacre of Palestinians during the Right to Return marches in 2018-2019 and said that the Democratic Party needed new leadership and need not remain under the old guard of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Indeed, these new faces of the Democratic Party's left wing were not the usual old white men one was accustomed to seeing running the political affairs of the nation, but instead young, vibrant women of color who were willing to play hardball with Democrats and push for universal health care, a $15 minimum wage, action on climate change, and policies rooted in human rights. At least that's how it started. Whether it was the persistent and sustained attacks from Republicans or unrelenting pressure to conform to Democratic leadership, whatever it was, somewhere along the way, these so-called progressives, regarded by many as heroes, became the opposite of everything they had campaigned for. For many people who helped them with their election campaigns, canvassed in the streets, donated their hard-earned money, and put in so much time and energy to get them elected, this felt like a betrayal. The first warning signs began appearing when we heard last year in 2020 from Politico how AOC was firing her former staff that got her elected and replacing them with establishment figures. Not only that, but she wasn't extending support to other progressive challengers for fear of angering her party colleagues. Again, the entire premise of the progressive strategy is to challenge and unseat establishment Democrats. Instead of supporting new challengers, AOC was protecting the party. Now AOC was no longer protesting and holding sit-ins in Speaker Pelosi's office. Now she was calling Nancy Pelosi Mama Bear. Progressives began doing other inexplicable things, like Ilhan Omar voting present on a motion to recognize the Armenian genocide. Ayanna Pressley and Ro Khanna went on to vote in favor of a resolution condemning the Boycott and Divestment Sanction Movement, or BDS, which is a nonviolent, peaceful protest against Israeli apartheid. Ilhan Omar even went on to sign a letter calling on then-Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to push for a renewal of the arms embargo on Iran before its expiry in late 2020. During the coronavirus crisis, corporations received the largest giveaway in history. The entire U.S. government, both Republicans and Democrats, all voted to give them trillions of dollars. Bernie Sanders and AOC came to the floor to give fiery speeches and pretend that they were outraged that so much money was being given to companies who don't need it, favoring them over working-class Americans who were without jobs, healthcare, or wages. And in the end, after all that talk, they still voted for the bill. They voted for the CARES Act, the HEROES Act, and virtually every so-called relief package, giving crumbs to the people and the lion's share to corporate America. Now, the latest so-called progressives to be elected to Congress recently include Jamal Bowman to New York's 16th congressional seat. He unseated a longtime ally of the Israeli lobby, Elliot Engel. And in order to prove that he wasn't a threat to Israeli interests, Bowman published an open letter in Riverdale Press confirming that he is opposed to the BDS movement, the most peaceful and nonviolent form of protest that anyone can adopt against Israel's oppression of Palestinians. As a matter of fact, Bowman admitted that former President Barack Obama was so impressed by this open letter that he even called him to endorse his candidacy. Another self-styled progressive named Richie Torres was elected to New York's 15th congressional district.
Hello, I'm Richie Torres. I am Afro-Latino, LGBTQ, millennial, progressive, and pro-Israel.
It's once again so astonishing to me how these politicians claim their politics and policies are rooted in human rights as they continue to protect Israel from any criticism and to be in a party in a government that subsidizes Israel's illegal occupation and oppression of Palestinians. During the 2020 Democratic primaries, when it became clear that Bernie Sanders' agenda became a threat to the Democratic Party, once again, Barack Obama made a few calls behind the scenes, persuading many of the challengers in the field to all drop out and rally behind Joe Biden. Once the race had been narrowed down to just two candidates with the entire weight of the establishment behind Joe Biden, it didn't take long for Bernie Sanders to drop out. Bernie Sanders had prided himself in building a popular grassroots movement made up of all age groups, ethnicities, and backgrounds. Instead of using his popularity and political capital to actually advance the progressive agenda, once again, Bernie Sanders pledged his support behind the establishment pick, Hillary Clinton in 2016, and now Joe Biden in 2020, abandoning his movement. The squad, who for the most part had endorsed Bernie Sanders, also rallied behind Joe Biden. Despite Joe Biden's abysmal record of working with segregationists, trying to cut Social Security, supporting the Iraq War, pushing the war on drugs, catering to the credit card industry, to the banks, to Big Pharma, and virtually every branch of the American corporate machine, these so-called progressives decided to endorse him and campaign on his behalf. How could these people who say their politics are all about elevating the working class and upholding human rights, who want Medicare for all, who want to increase Social Security, cut military spending, who stand on the opposite side of Joe Biden on virtually every issue, how can they just casually pledge their support to him? The line that we kept hearing from them and in the media was that, yeah, you know, Joe Biden may be terrible on this issue or that issue, but once he's elected, we'll push him left. We have to elect him because we have no choice. Donald Trump is so terrible. He's an existential threat. He's the most dangerous president in modern history. Which, again, as horrible as Donald Trump surely is, that title definitely belongs to George W. Bush and his administration. But, of course, all these neocons were themselves recruited, like Colin Powell speaking at the Democratic National Convention, in order to stump for Joe Biden. So, once again, I ask these so-called progressives, how on earth can you remain in a party that brings a war criminal and a mass murderer like Colin Powell to speak at your convention? If neoconservatives like Bill Kristol, George Bush, and other villainous figures like that are siding with you, don't you think there's something fundamentally wrong going on here? The entire media apparatus and Democratic Party acted as if Donald Trump had appeared out of the blue. They conveniently left out the fact that Joe Biden is the reason someone like Donald Trump was elected in the first place. Biden spent his entire career, some 40 plus years in government, building the system, being an architect of the neoliberal policies that eroded manufacturing, that took jobs overseas, deregulated Wall Street and the economy, let corporations run wild, and created so much of the economic misery and turmoil that could allow someone as heinous as Donald Trump to even win over a neoliberal figure like Hillary Clinton in the first place. Once again, the so-called left wing or progressive wing of the Democratic Party, the squad, they proved that they were willing to put their party first, not policies, not principles, nor people. In December 2020, with Speaker Pelosi's re-election as House Speaker coming up, an opportunity arose for progressives in Congress to actually do something. Many pundits, commentators, and journalists on the left, such as Jimmy Dore, Breonna Joy Gray, and NFL player Justin Jackson, argued in favor of force the vote. Earlier in January this year, Nancy Pelosi was re-elected Speaker of the House. With the final tally at 216 to 209, she won against McCarthy by a razor-thin margin of just 7 votes. If progressives had banded together, they could have easily leveraged their votes for her in exchange for a vote on Medicare for All. Instead, they rolled over like faithful, obedient poodles, and every single one of them voted for Nancy Pelosi to be re-elected House Speaker. Without demanding a single concession, Remember, this is the same woman who refused to impeach George Bush over the Iraq War, even when she knew that he was lying about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction. Again, just a month later, in February 2021, progressives had yet again another opportunity to push Biden left, as they claimed they would do. One of the key policies that the squad were elected on in the first place was raising the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 an hour. Joe Biden made this a campaign promise. Initially, the $15 minimum wage was put into a mammoth piece of legislation containing up to $1.9 trillion in this so-called COVID relief bill. When Biden tried to force this bill through the Senate using budget reconciliation, the Senate parliamentarian, whose opinion is non-binding and merely advisory, said that the $15 minimum wage had to be removed. It was also claimed that Joe Manchin, a senator from West Virginia, who was opposed to the $15 minimum wage being in the bill, threatened to vote against it if it was kept in there. Joe Biden pretended that his hands were tied, that he, the most powerful man in the world, the President of the United States, could not do anything because of an unelected Senate parliamentarian and a lone senator from West Virginia. Consequently, the $15 minimum wage was removed from the bill. And when the bill was sent back to the House, it passed. It passed with a razor-thin margin of 9 votes. Just 9 votes. That's all it would have taken for progressives to hold up this must-pass bill. Instead of putting their foot down and saying, no, we refuse to vote for this bill because it doesn't have the $15 minimum wage, the so-called left wing of the Democratic Party, these progressives in Congress, they just accepted it. They voted for this bill minus the $15 minimum wage. Isn't that interesting how Joe Manchin is willing to play hardball with Biden, but the progressives who claim they fight for workers won't? Not just that, but ever since Biden has taken office, AOC and her colleagues have done nothing but cover for Biden, even as he continues the very same policies they once criticized under Trump. Biden has continued to treat refugees coming to the United States in the same appalling conditions and manners as Donald Trump. Instead of calling him out for this, AOC goes on her virtual town hall and claims that what's happening at the border now is not the same, solely because Biden isn't ripping babies from their mother's arms. That's interesting because under Trump, AOC called the facilities at the U.S.-Mexico border concentration camps, with the phrase kids in cages becoming emblematic of the border crisis. Now those terms have completely disappeared from AOC's vocabulary. Right now, there are over 15,000 unaccompanied minors in custody at the U.S. border in appalling, cramped spaces. Biden has not only reopened the same camps that Donald Trump was using, he is also continuing to separate minors, but instead of doing it on the U.S. side of the border, he makes families do it for him on the Mexican side of the border. Biden refuses to accept families or adults, so the families and adults just tell their children to go on without them. The Washington Times reported in early April that the Department of Homeland Security seeks to continue construction of Trump's border wall, which so many liberals decried as racist and immoral, and now they say nothing. Biden has also requested to increase the military budget to $753 billion. That's the largest in history, even bigger than Trump's. As expected, the so-called progressives in Congress have not said a word. When Biden bombed Syria and now also plans to violate the Afghan peace deal and continue occupying Afghanistan, where is AOC? Where is the squad? Complete silence. Despite being the most popular politicians in the country, they say nothing and allow Biden to proceed unchecked with the imperialist agenda of the U.S. regime. Their silence is not incompetence, it's complicity. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Joining me is Ryan Knight. He's the host of the Amped Up podcast. Thanks for coming on the show, Ryan. It's great to have you on the program.
Hey, Richard. It's great to be here and great to see you again.
So, Ryan, I wanted to start out with this recent development that we saw in Politico, where Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, is taking money that she fundraised and giving it to establishment Democrats. People like Alyssa Slotkin, Connor Lamb, Carolyn Bordeaux. These are people who've openly celebrated both Trump and Biden's bombings of the Middle East. They've celebrated Trump's assassination of General Soleimani. Straight up warmongers. I mean, what was your initial reaction to that?
AOC and the squad were sent to Congress to fight back against the corrupt system, not to defend it like the corporatists do. And so if we just look at the past week and a half alone, AOC has called socialists and anyone who criticizes Joe Biden, quote unquote, bad faith actors. Then a few days later, she tried to say that Biden's cruelty and inhumanity at the border is somehow better than Trump's cruelty and inhumanity at the border, despite the fact that they both locked children in cages and they both are separating children from their families, except Joe Biden is just doing it on the other side of the border. And then finally, like you just said, the report came out a few days ago, or last Friday, excuse me, that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who claims to be just a people-funded grassroots candidate, was taking those grassroots donations and sending them to corporate Democrats who oppose Medicare for All and support endless wars. And this is the part we have to be clear on. Anyone who campaigns on and promises revolutionary change and takes money from poor and working class people to get power and then refuses to use their seat to actually fight for the socialist policies that they campaigned on, that is literally the definition of a bad faith actor, right? So AOC is not leading the left. She's stabbing the left in the back. And we've seen that over and over again now from, you know, go back to January. AOC and the squad did not force the vote on Medicare for All and demand concessions for their vote for Pelosi. They didn't pressure Joe Biden on the $15 minimum wage fight. And again, they continue to apologize for the corrupt establishment instead of fighting back against it. So I'm over here wondering, when does the fight begin?
So, I mean, when you heard this term, bad faith actor, coming from AOC, saying that people who say there's no progress under Joe Biden compared to Trump are privileged in their critique. I mean, who is she referring to when she says that?
Well, I also think we have to step back and realize that the Democrats control the entire government right now. They control the House, the Senate, and the White House. And they're still blaming Republicans for all of our problems, despite the fact that it's not Donald Trump anymore who's dropping the bombs and who's locking the children in cages and who's increasing the military spending and who's putting corporations over people. That's Joe Biden who's doing all those things now. So for AOC to say that those of us, you know, the activists and those in the grassroots community who are fighting back against this corrupt system and demanding representation from people who campaigned on policies, that's all we're doing. AOC and the squad ran on a set of policies. All we're telling them is you need to own up to your promises and fight for the policies you campaigned on. To call us bad faith actors because we see that, you know, Joe Biden is governing the exact same way Trump did, and basically we've just got a kinder face on the oligarchy, but all of the destruction and the damage is continuing that continued under Trump. That is very dangerous. And then we have an entire corporate media apparatus who, you know, when Trump was doing these things, when Trump was locking kids in cages and you know, engaging in endless wars and bombing Syria, the media was up in arms about it. But when Joe Biden does it, they just look the other way. And so that's why it's important for independent media and for people like me and you to hold the Democratic Party accountable, because there's no accountability in the press. And so when AOC did that, when she said that, you know, we're the bad faith actors. And then she, after that, she actually said that we need solidarity. We need to build solidarity with the Biden administration. So AOC is telling us that she wants to build solidarity with the corporate Democrats who are continuing to govern like the Republicans do. They want solidarity with the capitalist right-wing Democratic Party and its leaders, but they don't want solidarity with the grassroots. And that should concern everyone, because that's how change happens. Change happens from the grassroots. And I thought she was leading a movement. It turns out, like I said, she's stabbing the movement right in the back. And I think even sadder, her fans can't see it. There's like this new cult of personality that has developed around AOC. And it's scary.
So Ryan, you've been holding progressives accountable. What are some of the attacks and abuse that you have received or have seen others receive as a result of just calling out these politicians for, rolling over and doing the bidding of the establishment?
I've been called racist, misogynist, for simply reporting what AOC did and AOC said, for simply saying that AOC gave grassroots donations to corporate Democrats. There's been people who've told me that AOC is, and I quote, unassailable. And if you look up the word unassailable in the dictionary, it literally means that you can't be questioned or challenged. And if you think that a leader cannot be questioned or challenged, you don't belong to a progressive movement. You belong to a cult of personality movement. Seriously, I mean that. And I think when you start to unpack what it is, I think that a lot of these kind of, you know, the boutique left, or they're really just liberals, to be honest. I think they're so afraid of any criticism of AOC or Bernie or the squad because they've placed all their faith in trying to reform and move the corrupt Democratic Party to the left. So they treat even valid criticisms as an attack on their belief system. But both history and our current reality have shown that the Democratic Party cannot be moved left. You cannot move a party left that is owned by Wall Street and that is owned by the military-industrial complex and that is owned by the billionaire class. And so this whole process of trying to spend all this energy to move a party left that can't be moved left would be much better spent trying to build power for the people outside of the corrupt duopoly. But they don't want to do that. They want to keep putting these heroes on a pedestal and worshiping AOC and worshiping the squad and even in some points worshiping Bernie instead of actually taking matters into our own hands and building power for the people and building like a true left working class party in our country, because we don't have that. Both parties in Washington represent big business and giant corporations. Neither party represent the people.
I mean, this cult of personality, this blind adoration of politicians is obviously not healthy. What do you think are going to be the long-term effects of that? And, you know, just on a final note, what would you like to see from these elected officials and politicians?
I would just end with, why is it fair that in the United States of America that we have two political parties that serve the interests of the capitalist class and of the giant corporations, but zero major parties that serve the interests of the working class? That is not right. That is not fair. And I would just tell people, it is, you're never going to change the Democratic Party. They are going to continue to sedate the public with all these platitudes and all these promises, and then you give them power, and then they turn around and they govern just like the Republicans do for their giant corporations and for the military-industrial complex. And the insanity just keeps repeating itself over and over again. So no matter who wins the election every 4 years, the wars continue, the inequality continues, and the injustice continues. So I would tell people, stop silencing debate. Stop putting all your faith in people like AOC and Bernie Sanders and the squad, and start realizing that we have the power. You know, stop giving your power away to these politicians. Demand something for your vote. You know, get into your communities. Build, do mutual aid in your own communities. Stop thinking that the only answer is trying to change a party that tells us over and over again that it hates us and wants nothing to do with progressives. You know, I feel like we're caught in this abusive relationship. So the only way to end an abusive relationship is to leave it. So I think I encourage all progressives to start working outside of the Democratic Party. It's a lost cause. It's a dead end.
Ryan Knight, thanks so much for the work you do on your podcast. Really appreciate having you on the program.
Thank you, and I hope you come back on my show again. You were awesome to have.
At the end of the day, let's be clear on something. Regardless of how much pressure these politicians face with their parties and other forces in Washington, D.C., the squad, AOC, Bernie Sanders, these are some of the most popular politicians in the United States, if not the world. They have enormous, powerful platforms which they could use to mount pressure and push the policies that they were elected to implement, but actively choose not to. As Ro Khanna himself admits, being a U.S. congressperson is one of the most privileged positions in the world. Whatever the reason behind their flip-flopping and hypocrisy, what's clear is that these are not the same people anymore. The AOC of 2018 is not the AOC of 2021. Instead of challenging Democrats from within, helping to cause more upset victories, playing hardball, playing politics correctly, pulling smart moves, they are nothing but a marketing tool designed to sheep herd Americans back into the Democratic Party, which again, by anyone's definition, is a right-wing party. They make sure that Americans never explore other options such as third parties or direct action, protesting, general strikes, rent strikes, debt strikes. Their entire purpose is to protect the establishment in its entirety and to insulate the Democratic Party and Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer from criticism. The Squad and all these other so-called progressives, they're not a threat to the establishment. They are de facto the establishment, but with a new face. Remember, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are two sides of the same coin. Their differences are minimal, and they serve the same corporate masters. They uphold U.S. hegemony. They uphold the U.S. military-industrial complex. They protect Israel. They continue to deprive their own population of basic things like healthcare and housing. People who protect that kind of political system are not your friends. People often look at FDR as a progressive champion because he passed the New Deal. But they forget that the New Deal was only passed because FDR was pressured by a coalition of socialists, communists, unionists who threatened him with revolution. The New Deal was his way of silencing them, of placating the left. And after that, he proceeded to co-opt the left in order to blunt it, to render it ineffective, and to neutralize this threat to the elite. Americans would do well to learn their own history. You don't reform the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party reforms you. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Salaamu Alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems and questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. I'm Hassanain, and we have in the studio our guest speaker, Sheikh Farman Ali Ma'asumi. He's an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya Qom. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Brother Farman.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
How are you, brother?
Thank you so much for inviting me and for giving me this great opportunity. And I would like to thank the IRIB English Radio for giving me this great opportunity.
So in this program, we'll look on to different ways how the parents can control their children. So Sheikh Farman, please continue.
We were talking about how we should advise our children.
Yeah.
So Quran and Islamic teachings say that we should do indirect advice to our children, especially teenagers. When we spoke in our last episode that Quran also says, emphasize on this way of advising people indirectly.
True, yeah, that's right.
Maybe this question will raise in your mind that so while there are a lot of, you know, direct advisors we have in the Holy Quran, in Hadith, in, you know, in, for example, Hazrat Luqman, you know, advising his son in the Holy Quran.
Yeah, right.
The answer is whenever you feel that your listener is ready to give whatever you are saying, there you should do advice directly.
Okay, so
for example, our imams, whenever they would go to preach, to tell, you know, teach the people, they would do directly, advise them. Yeah, because there was the situation was like this, everybody was ready to take whatever imam would say. But we are talking about teenagers. They are not ready to take whatever you say, whatever advice you give. So in these situations, we should do indirect.
So when we know that the listener will accept it and act upon it, so that it can be direct.
Yeah, like on our Holy Prophet's whole life, you can see he has done a lot of indirect, tabligh also.
True,
and wherever there people are ready, he would do directly Tabligh or advises. So we are emphasizing on this that we should do indirectly advise our teenagers mostly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes directly we can do, but in a very polite way.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me give some examples, you know, how we can do advise our children, teenagers, indirectly. Mm-hmm. For example, your teenager son spends a lot of time playing games, internet games, online games.
Many parents face this problem.
So, for example, you want to say something that this is not good for your health. So, you go purchase a book about this. You know, for example, if he reads books, again, it goes to your tarbiyah. If it is your habit to give him books, so now also you can purchase a book and give him. Then when he studies the book, he can understand.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But if this wasn't part of your daily routine, you would not give any
book. He won't be interested in reading the book.
So if you purchase a book, he will understand that you have purchased this book specially.
Yeah.
So it would become a direct advice, which will not have any impact.
True.
So always our indirect advice should be in such a way that it remains indirect.
True,
our teenager does not understand that we want to advise him.
True.
Then it can be beneficial and effective. Otherwise, it can have, you know, reactions also. If he understands that you want to advise him, then maybe he will become more rebel.
Thank you so much, Sheikh Farman. Let's take a short break over here, and dear audience, we'll be right back after the break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to your audience, and before the break, we were discussing about the direct and the indirect way of advising. So, Sheikh Farman, do you have any more points to add to it?
Yeah, alhamdulillah, our riwayat, our imams, Imam Ma'sumin alayhim as-salam, and the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam have left us such a big and very important treasure in the form of riwayat, which have a lot of benefit for us. So in riwayat and in the life of our Ma'sumin al-Islam, we can find so many rules that how to behave and treat our teenagers, you know, indirectly how we can advise. So there are some very important rules. I will quickly list-wise mention. Inshallah, our listeners can note it down and they can use in their practical life. Regarding our teenagers, the first and very important rule is we have to be open-minded. As I said, we should not use our mindset. You know, in the atmosphere where we have been brought up, and our fathers and our parents, they have brought up us, we should leave that mindset. And we should be open-minded. Because there is a big gap between us and our children, teenagers.
Yeah, you know, there's a time difference.
Time difference. Technology has advanced a lot. So many,
indeed,
many differences.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so we cannot keep all the things which we have brought in our society in mind. And according to that, we advise our teenagers. No, it is completely wrong.
True.
Our imams also, they have said that your age is different.
From
you know,
the
your
age
era
of
was
fathers,
is completely different, and your children's era is completely different.
Yeah, that's right.
So this we should keep in our mind, and we should be open-minded. When your teenager understands that you are open-minded, then he can come close to you.
True.
Yeah. Then this gap can be reduced slowly. This is a very, very difficult. Because, for example, a father in his 40s and 50s, you know, for 35 years he has been in our atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter whatever struggle it needs, we should struggle and we should bring this change in our mind and use an open mind to discuss with your teenagers.
That's right. So let's take a short break over here and we'll continue after the break.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "He who has a child must treat him in a childish manner."
Welcome back to your audience, and before the break we were discussing about the different ways of advising the children. So one of them we said is the parents need to be open-minded. And proceeding with this next one, I would like Sheikh Farman to continue.
Second rule regarding advising your teenagers is you keep yourself in his place. This is very important again.
Yeah.
You suppose that you are a teenager and you think that how you want your parents to behave you. According to that, you behave with your teenager. This is again very difficult, but very useful. If you use yourself, you will see totally difference between your thoughts, your mindset, and the needs and requirements of your teenager.
That's right.
So this can help you to better understand your teenager.
True.
And number three is to be a very good listener. This is very, very important again. I think the most important thing is to be a good listener.
To the children.
To the children. As you know that our Rasulullah, according to Quran, he was khayru udhun. You know? He would listen to his companions, he would listen to the people as if, you know, completely he was focusing on the person who was talking to him.
Yeah, so he was the best listener.
Yeah, best listener.
Yeah.
That's what Quran says, khayru udhun. The best ear.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah. When the person you're talking to him or he's talking to you, he understands you are listening carefully. This solves the half of problem.
That's right, yeah.
To be
so
a good listener.
So it's like respecting your listener.
Respecting your listener. And unfortunately, in our families, especially between husband and wife or children and parents, this is lacking nowadays.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Because while talking, he's thinking about something else.
True.
Yeah, he's watching TV or playing with his mobile.
Yeah, it's disrespectful to the person who's talking.
Disrespectful, and you cannot understand whatever he's saying completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So being a very, very good listener to your children solves half of the problems. Riwayat also, even the Western, you know, psychologists or the experts, they say, they have written a lot of books also, that if you become a good listener to your children, especially to your teenagers, they will become, in return, a very good listener.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem is listening to each other.
That's right. Yeah.
Even personally, I have seen, I was in this corona time, I had discussion, with a couple, they had problems with each other, you know. They were married for 10 years, but for some problems, they were separated. So I talked first to the husband, then the wife, and I noted all the differences, all the, you know, disputes between them. And then I said to husband, first carefully listen whatever she complains over the Zoom meeting, Then she started saying all the problems. Then after she finished, I said to her to listen carefully whatever her husband says. Then again, husband started speaking all the problems they had between. When they understood each other's,
problems,
disputes and problems, after that, there was, I think, very less disputes between them.
Yeah,
the main problem was they were not listening to each other.